Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Hey, my name!
Hey, my name!
We get better and better!
We get better
and better!
We get
beat!
We get beat!
Beat!
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Welcome to it, Friday edition, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, it is gorgeous outside in eastern Nebraska, I hear. Hope it's that way for you in Kearney, Hastings, Grand Island, North Platte, Columbus, wherever you hear us. And hope you have the Cinco de Mayo off to a safe, sober, I won't say sober, but safe start as you get rocking. I swear to you, we hit a Mexican restaurant probably 50% of the Fridays I'm not doing a game with Mama. So every Friday is kind of like Cinco de Mayo for us to a extent of having delicious food and something tasty to drink.
Yeah. Oh, I love Mexican food.
So do I.
So good. But I got to say, not a fan of Mexican beers, or maybe I haven't had the right ones.
Okay. You have not. What have you tried?
Don't like Corona. Don't like Dos Equis.
Dos Equis?
Yeah. Or as my sister's father calls it, 2X.
Okay. You get the double X?
Gotta get the 2X.
How about Modelo Especial?
Not sure if I've had that one or not.
So your position,
would you rank that ahead of the other two?
That's where I go.
Okay.
But I like Dos Equis a lot, and I'll drink Corona because Coach Brett always has one for me.
There you go.
And someone else's Corona tastes better.
That's right.
Always.
Always.
So it is kind of a light Friday. There's some things we can get into. You have a number of Nebraska players trying to get invited back to camp this weekend. We can chew on that a little bit. Here is the lineup for you on Hail Varsity Radio. Bill Dolman, the Pride of Fairbury, with us in 15 minutes. We have a special time for the Friday forecast today at 4:40. Klausburn is in contract negotiations with another entity. He'll still be with us till the end of time, but he's got a sit-down meeting with somebody, which is cool.
Yeah, big time.
We're proud of Klausburn down in Texas. So forecast at 4:40. Get locked into that because Vogues will tell you who's winning the Kentucky Derby. And then in hour two, a guy I love catching up with, and he has seen it all and done it all in college football, Gentleman Jim Walden. Longtime coach at Iowa State, longtime coach at Washington State, longtime assistant under Coach Devaney at Nebraska. So he has seen and does it all, does radio for Washington State football, and has spent time doing radio in Iowa. So he has an extremely unique dynamic in regards to the Brian Ferentz dust-up yesterday. He's coached at Iowa State. He's recruited against Iowa. He's recruited against Nebraska. He's recruited for Nebraska. So we'll get caught up with Gentleman Jim Walden in 1 hour. If you're out and about, you're making your way to the bar for Cinco de Mayo, or you're heading to your kid's game, you don't want to miss 5 o'clock here on Hail Varsity. Brandon Vogel will join us again in hour two. And then we'll introduce you to the new play-by-play man for the Lincoln Salt Dogs, Michael Shively. He's a Lincoln East kid product, and he's done some pro baseball the last couple of years. Excited to have him back in Lincoln, and the Dogs get cranked up here shortly. So Michael Shively will help us say goodbye to the week that was. News here real quick. Michael Rozavi, this from the World Herald, is getting a tryout with the 49ers this weekend. So good for him. Michael Rozavi, a talented linebacker that got kind of set back many times by injury, but he's got a lot of perseverance. So we'll see where that goes. We'll dive into Tommy Armstrong's weekend, how that looks in a moment. Brandon Riley did get a contract by Buffalo, which is cool. But I want to start out with the two things that made you stop this week in the world of sports, aside from Brian Ferentz as a Nebraska fan. And it came down to money. Two instances of money this week in sports made you slam the brakes on. One, Nick Saban, $11 million. Two, LaVar Ball. And you might be fed up and annoyed with the dude, and I get that. I can't. I am. I stop when I hear him speak because I'm, what is he going to say next? What idiotic thing will come out of his mouth? What wise thing will come out of his mouth? How's this working? And this is the walking, talking embodiment of helicopter daddy.
Oh, yeah.
No matter how bad you think you are or your brother is or people in your family or people around the fourth grade basketball program or the slime ball that may or may not funnel kids out on the West Coast to certain AAU programs, whatever. I mean, I have all of those things running through my mind when I see and hear LaVar Ball. And I don't know that it is about his kids, if he has that much love, or if it's about him and his greed, or if it's the whole vicarious living. I haven't nailed it down. I think it's all of it, but I can't put a percentage on it. If I'm cutting pieces in a pie here, I think half of it's greed, and the other half of it is vicarious living.
I mean, who knew when we went, if we go all the way back to November, that this star freshman's dad would just say, yeah, UCLA's going to win it all this year at some early season tournament, that he would explode to this. Like, at the time, you're just like, oh, you know, confident dad, you know, obviously rooting on his son, thinks they're going to win it all. That's kind of cute. And here we are now.
You think he's a leech? You think he's a loudmouth leech? Do you pay much attention to him? The reason I bring him up, and dare I have audio of him here coming up, is because if you have kids, you're going to run into it. I kind of whined about this yesterday briefly. But somebody in your kid's class, if you have younger ones or even older ones, or maybe you yourself, you're going to splurge on it because that's what we do. Someone's going to roll up soon with ball basketball shoes because they can.
Mm-hmm.
And they will. That's what's going to happen. So it's going to be an issue for you. Or it could be a non-issue. You could just say, shut up, and that's how much you make mowing lawns, $25 a yard. Start saving before the shoe company charges $1,000 for a pair of shoes or they go under. So here is LaVar Ball. Dan Lebatard had him on earlier today on ESPN Radio. Lebatard, Stugatz, and Mr. LaVar Ball on the price, the shoe. It's hilarity.
Who's making the sneakers?
We're making the sneakers ourselves.
No, but LaVar, you're not in the garage making sneakers. Who's helping?
No, you can't be in the garage making sneakers. I'm making my sneakers the same way Michael Jordan and Nike making their sneakers.
Overseas.
How much do they cost to make?
Shut up.
How much do they cost to make?
Yeah.
That's a business thing. I don't think that's a good question.
No, you're right. No, that's smart. He is smart to do that. Now, the price point. How did you decide on $495?
I figure that's what the shoe is worth. I like the way it's styled. And see, when you're your own owner, you can go with any price you want, how you feel it is. Now, see, with Nike and Under Armour, whatever price, I bet you LeBron, Kobe, none of them sat in on the price point. Because they're going to sell it for what they want to sell it for.
Right. Okay, so right. What suggestions did you get before you decided on $495?
I didn't get no suggestions.
All right.
I just come up with it because it's mine.
Okay.
Like I said, let Nike and Adidas and Under Armour, they battling below me.
Okay.
Let them go ahead and battle their stuff in Foot Locker.
Okay.
I'm better than them.
Okay.
So I'm a step above.
All right. So why
do you... are a premium shoe.
Okay. So why didn't you make it $500, though?
$500? $495 sounds better.
Okay.
I like three different digits.
I'm with you on that.
Okay. Three.
Yes.
He likes three different digits.
Yes.
Okay. $500.
Makes sense.
All right. No. Excellent. So...
Oh, man. Business acumen, LaVar Ball.
Hey, LaVar, what do they cost to make? Next question. I remember seeing the 60 Minutes where they went overseas to Indonesia or Thailand or wherever the hell they make Air Jordans, and it was like $6 to make them. Now, my figure is wrong. but in reference to the 125, I had to beg and plead and eventually go outlet store shopping to finally get a pair of Air Jordans. Yes, I was superficial and stupid, but damn it, I wanted Air Jordans as a kid.
Who didn't?
We all did.
Yeah.
And thankfully, my parents were like, sure, you're earning them. It's on you. We'll chip in $40. That's how we treat Carson. Carson goes through shoes like they're socks because that's what he spends his money on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay. If that's his thing, I'm okay with it, but I'm not funding it. So he's going to like go, you know, Dad, that I'm waiting for that conversation. And he's going to, you know, give the little sad and sappy look to Mama. And the cat's out of the bag with the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus with him. And he's known it for 4 years, but he's been getting an extra pair of shoes from Santa every freaking year till he finally fessed up. So he doesn't have that revenue stream to kick in.
Yeah. Do you think he'll recognize that the $4.95 is quite larger than the $125 for a pair of shoes?
Yeah. But I don't think he cares because, you
know, he's got to have them.
He's got to have them. And at some point, there's like this expectation of, well, my first NBA game was in a suite, my first Nebraska football game was in a suite, so damn it, I'm Carson Schmidt. And I'm like, shut up, go sell pizza. You want to go to Memorial Stadium next time, grab a Runza bucket, go sell. Period.
Maybe you should take him to the berm next baseball game.
I'm going to, absolutely, if he's not playing. So you're going to run into this. So not only are these shoes $4.95, but now you have the slides. And that's the other thing the kid wears. He either wears basketball shoes or stupid slides. Every practice he goes to, he's coming home, but know where his basketball or baseball shoes are, but he's got slides.
Oh, yeah. When you're walking to play basketball, you just put on the sandals.
That's right. The only time in the world you can get away with socks and sandals, but those are $220.
But we agree, LeVar, like $220 for a pair of flip-flops, that seems a little excessive.
That is a lot.
Why is that excessive? Prada and Gucci selling there for what they want. My sandal looks better than that. It feels better.
All right.
I feel my sandal's worth $220. Now, you have to pay. This stuff right here is symbolic. And that comes with a price. Okay. Nobody's ever came in the game with their own brand. My son got his own slider and his own shoe before he even touched the floor as a rookie. And guess what? He designed all of it. Nike, Adidas ain't gonna let nobody 19 years old design nothing. They got their own designers.
Okay, I think I've got you trapped here, though, on an inconsistency. I think I've got LeVar Ball
trapped.
Okay, you said you liked $495 as a price point because it was three different digits, but those flip-flops are 220, and that's only two different digits.
Well, that's talking about the flip-flop, that's why. A flip-flop, give me that.
Okay,
flip-flop, 2-2.
Okay.
Perfect, man.
Flip-flop, 2-2. Man, he's good. I thought I had him trapped, but he wiggled away from me. That's right. It could be $220 because he says it is.
He's elusive.
He is kind of funny to listen to, entertaining.
What if we could just live life like that? Hey, here's what I'm worth. Pay me that amount of money.
I'll say this.
I'm worth $1 million.
He said my son designed them. I might call BS on that.
Yeah, he needs some
help. They look like Kobe's.
Yep.
Or the like Jordan 3s. But he at least said my son, not me. And he went we. So I didn't think I'd hear that the entire interview.
He surprised you.
He surprised me. Will Nebraska have a few surprises make it into training camp? Let's just go quick, rapid fire. Brandon Riley got a contract today. Will he stick with the 90-man roster? I think he does.
I think he does, too.
Buffalo has good receivers, but they're injury-prone, and Riley can play both spots.
Yeah.
I know I just transitioned away from ball talk, but we're going to talk some football here for a second. Tommy Armstrong, I think he does enough to make the 93-man roster, 90-man roster. I think he gets past this weekend. Because I was doing
a little too soon for me. I think he just needs some more time.
Twin Cities did a story with him, an interview with him, I think Pioneer Press. And I did not know, as many times we talked to Tommy, I didn't ask him what other positions he was recruited at. Oklahoma State and Oklahoma wanted him to play safety in the Big 12. So he's going to get a look at safety. He's going to get a look at running back. He's going to get a look at wide receiver. And I think Spielman's got a special interest in this. So not
for sure.
Not that he'll pull strings or direct traffic, but I think there is some things. I think Tommy's in a really comfortable spot. I think Newbie will absolutely make the cut because they've invested in him. Mm-hmm. They've signed him. I don't know about Rose Ivy with his injury history. I think Bando will kind of go back to that special teams role. And I think he can make the 93-man roster. Westerkamp, I think Tampa's too tough to make.
Yeah,
man. He might be the one guy out of all of these guys we're asking about that kills it.
Yeah.
And makes it. But but that jump from making it to OTAs to practice squad even with Tampa and the receivers they have, I think Westy will end up in the NFL. I don't think it'll be with Tampa.
Yeah. I definitely think Seathan will.
Seathan's good. I think Seathan will maybe be Cincinnati's second tight end.
Yeah, he could.
And, you know, Kevin Maurice, he's hometown Jacksonville, that area. He's not a Jayville guy, but he's from around there, from Orlando. And now Jacksonville and Orlando are quite a ways apart. Point is we'll see how Maurice does back in his home state. Pride of Fairbury, up next. Bill Dolman with us on Hail Varsity Radio.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. And I think I know why he said, "Why are you calling me now? I screwed up times." Bill Dolman is with us, the Pride of Fairbury, at Bill Dolman on Twitter, NBC Sports. Billy D, you're a little bit earlier, but you've missed me. How are you?
I am early. I had to put my blue plate special down a little earlier than anticipated.
Well, I am. Apologies, sir.
The afternoon bridge club is going to be a little upset, but that's okay. They can put it off for a while as long as they can stay awake.
That's fine. In other news, did you see Spartacus is now on Netflix?
I can watch it on Netflix. You live it.
I know. What do you know, man? What's the week been like?
It's the track and field season. I mean, we all know that we're getting ready for the Diamond League and the big Doha track meet in Doha was this weekend. Shanghai next weekend on the NBC family of networks. That's the big deal right now.
Well, I'm excited for you. You've done Olympic sports for a lot of your career, and the track and field season's fun to watch. Bill, want to start off with yesterday's topic du jour, and we spent a lot of time on Brian Ferentz, Iowa's offensive coordinator. I have not had a chance to talk to you about it, but he had some things to say, not only about Minnesota and Iowa State, but also Nebraska. The Nebraska thing to do would be to pay it no mind. He doesn't get what the pipeline is or the brand of Nebraska is. That said, though, that you factor in the colors he wears, that irks Nebraska fans even more because there's just such a dislike of Iowa by many Nebraska fans. What's your reaction to what he said?
Well, I'm guessing that's the last time he'll be on a show because I'm sure his dad's going to say no more. You know, here's what I do like about it. Finally, we can acknowledge that we have a rival again. Now, it's certainly not as respectful, certainly not as good and tradition-rich and all the great things that made Nebraska-Oklahoma the greatest rivalry in college football and one of the greatest in sports. We love to hate them, hated to love them. Bottom line. Iowa, it's always been there that there should be a rivalry with those guys, all right? I know the Big 12 tried to force this Colorado thing down our throats, and we could care less, which makes them even madder. maybe Kansas State in the, you know, in the early Snyder era, maybe, you know, Missouri back in the Big 8 days in October was always a fun thing. But now I think we can say that we have that we finally have a rivalry with somebody, and it's those guys. So that's positive, okay? That the games at the end of the year mean something, and I think this kind of escalated it just a little bit. When I read the pipeline thing, I'm like, I kind of had the same thought was, do you know what the pipeline is?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think we've ever sold Nebraska as a pipeline to the NFL. I don't ever recall that. Now, maybe that's changed in the years that I've been gone, but I just don't believe that to be true. I think when anybody associates the pipeline with Nebraska football, you're talking about the greatest offensive lines and offensive line coaches in the history of the game. So he doesn't know what he's talking about there. Secondly, if you're Iowa, what do you sell a recruit on? You sell them on hope as well. You sell them on, but the certainty that they do have at Iowa, and maybe not necessarily hope, but the certainty you have with Iowa is you will come to Iowa, and we can promise you that you will suck for a year. The next year, you'll be a little bit better. The next year, you'll be a little bit better and probably be above 500. And by the time you're a senior, we're going to be in contention to go to the Rose Bowl. We'll win 10 or 11 games and flirt with the top 10. We can promise you that. And then the fifth year, because it's our way, cyclically, you will suck. So you might want to graduate in 4 years and not five, because if you go to Iowa to play football for 5 years, you will suck twice. That's what we can guarantee you.
How do you really feel? Wow. It
just
is.
Let me know when we're, it's a know slow, when we're on the air.
No, we're on the air now. It's a slow burn and build up.
Seriously. What if they, I mean, I'm no big fan of Colin Cowherd, but he has long said that it's one of the biggest frauds in college football. And the pattern, for, and by the way, after that fourth year, when you win 9, 10, 11 games and flirt with the top 10, and they're talking about you as a dark horse national champion, right? And then the Washington Redskins will have Kurt Ferentz on their list of coaches that they might hire. And then he'll get a contract extension from Iowa for another $3 million a year, and then they're going to win 5 games the next and lose to a D2 school, right?
No, you've nailed it.
Is that the pattern? That's the pattern of Iowa football.
So, what you're?
I know that he doesn't know the pipeline.
No, I know. But as a Nebraska guy, did you ever pay much attention to Iowa? Now it seems like, I mean, you kind of had that Colorado feeling towards them.
No. No, I think there's a hope for that this is a rivalry.
Sure, sure. I mean, this.
But I do. I think that for all those years, even in the Big 8 back in the day, you know, you always said it'd be nice to play those guys because that would be a good non-conference rivalry game. But it never happened. What, like 5 times over, you know, like 40 years?
Early 80s and then late 90s.
Yeah, you know, oh, we lost Larry Station. Okay, Sean Ridley. Oh, boy, they're stealing all our great players. Okay. You know, when you can name the great players from Nebraska that have gone over there, you know, on one hand, it's not that big of a deal. It's like the Colorado wins. When you can name the years that Colorado beat Nebraska over 60 years, it's not a rivalry, okay? So, but I think that it's there for the Big Ten. I think, again, Nebraska has been so good for the Big Ten Conference. I know we're not contending for conference championships and all that, but when you're talking about $30 and $40 million a year, you know, the Big Ten network is pretty solid. When you consider the landscape of sports television right now, what's going on with the Big Ten network is very solid, and that's due in large part to getting Nebraska on board 5 years ago. That solidified things for that network as a national brand, right? So moving forward, the Nebraska-Iowa rivalry, while it may not ever rival Michigan-Ohio State in terms of hate, it may not rival Minnesota and every oak and bucket they have a rivalry with, you know, in terms of years and tradition. I think that it's very good for Nebraska. I think it's certainly better for Iowa. to have a rivalry with Nebraska. I think that that's just another great aspect about the Huskers being in that conference. I think it elevates everybody, stirs everybody up a little bit more, and it makes the game at the end of the year something to look forward to and a lot more fun. Let's face it, we were faking it with Colorado, you know? I mean, that just wasn't a rivalry. I mean, people thought it was. They wanted it. It just wasn't. This, I think, stirs the pot a little bit, and I think that's a good thing.
Okay, Bill, I want to switch over to some NBA basketball, and
I want to talk to someone about how much Iowa sucks.
You've said this statement twice on a radio show, and I just got to say, I completely disagree. You've said that Kevin Durant coming back to the Warriors would actually be kind of a detriment to them. Dan, did you think that for the whole entire playoffs or when they face better competition, say, in the Western Conference Finals or NBA Finals?
Well, I've thought about it as I've watched, and he's certainly been a factor and a positive for them, but I don't think they've been challenged that much.
Okay.
The third quarter yesterday, they got challenged a little bit when Utah cut it to 8. That, I think it's the most they've been challenged in the postseason. To a certain extent, it has not worked out the way I thought it would, but we have not gotten down to, you know, the Western Conference Finals, mm-hmm. probably against Houston. And we have not gotten certainly to the NBA Finals, and there's no guarantee that they're going to get there. He's certainly played and assimilated himself much better to this point than I thought was going to happen. But if that matchup with Houston, I think that is a really, really intriguing. The Rockets should beat the Spurs, especially with Tony Parker out.
Yeah.
I just think that's a really intriguing matchup in terms of Houston, who's not afraid to shoot 53 pointers a game and run like they do with Golden State. And I continue to say I think Houston's a dark horse to win it all.
No, and that's something I agree with you on, is that I think Houston has a better chance of beating Golden State than Cleveland does. Would you agree with that?
Because of the three, and because mm-hmm. Ryan Anderson, the way he has shot the three in this series against San Antonio, I know they lost the other day. He didn't shoot the ball well in that opening series against Oklahoma City. But Ryan Anderson is a huge thing. They've been trying to get him for years. When I was down there, he was always on the board, and they couldn't pull the trigger. But I think he's a huge factor. Eric Gordon has been very consistent. Lou Williams was a great midseason pickup.
Yes.
And Nene, and you know, when Clint Capella was drafted by the Rockets, I was still down there. And you're looking at, why in the world did you just draft Manute Bol's son? Because he did look like he's 7 feet yeah. tall and about 185. But he's put some size on. He's assimilated to the game very well. There's a lot to like about the Rockets. And dare I say, and part of that is because of the maturity of James Harden. Now, he disappeared in game two in San Antonio, and he looked like the James Harden that I remember. That, we won game one. I don't need to show up. And that can't happen. But that's a really good team. And I was watching TNT the other day, and I think there's one team that's won that's been primarily a three-point shooting team. And they're probably alluding to Golden State a couple of years ago. And they said if any team could do it, it would be the Rockets, and I agree with that.
Bill, about 20 seconds, $495 for a pair of basketball shoes. Do you double take, or do you say, give me a pair?
I wouldn't pay $4.95 for those shoes, for one thing. The flip-flops were $2.95.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about a headache. I know the Lakers want him, and they might just get him. But, you're drafting that kid, you're drafting that dad. Mm. And that, I'm happy that there's a father looking out for his son and wanting the best, but there's too much capitalization going on, and dad's interjecting himself too much. It's one of the reasons why I heard the Texans didn't take Derek Carr, because they didn't want David Carr's dad around much more.
Wow.
And whoever drafts him is going to have to deal with that, and that may not be worth it.
Billy D, be good, brother. Thank you so much.
Go Big Red.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to hailvarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Well, the good news is it's Friday forecast time. The tough news is Klausburn's in contract negotiations. Not with us, with others. So we're happy for it. He'll be back next week, whether he likes it or not. The Friday forecast presented to you by the Gamblers Assistance Program, the Nebraska Council on Compulsive Gambling and Choices Treatment Center. If you or someone you love has a problem gambling, call the statewide helpline 1-800-522-4700. Let's get this rolling. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Mr. Brandon Vogel with HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogues will join us in a little bit as it's a special forecast time today at the 440 segment. Fellas, how we doing this weekend?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm not about to get saving money like Clausburn probably is, but otherwise I'm okay.
Yeah, I wanted hot commodity, Clausburn.
He's big time. You turn people into stars here.
That's what we do.
myself excluded. We'll start with the NBA. Cavs, Raptors, and you have 3.5-point favorite Cleveland. I don't know if LeBron's going to go free throw line ball spin again tonight or think about having a cocktail. I know Labatt is popular up in Toronto. You know, Cleveland's just on a mission. They're shooting too well. They're playing great defense, and they're in transition. They look like the champs, quite frankly, like the defending champs. Give me Cavs in a tighter one, but a road win. They've been consistent. That's what I'm going to go with tonight. 117-110. I know that's a lot of points, but I think Toronto will have a little bit of oomph in their game at home in front of their great crowd, TJ.
Yeah, the T-Dot can get rocking in the playoffs. We the North, they bring it, but apparently it's like 40 degrees and a monsoon up there, so the outside TV watching will be to a minimum of amount of people. Look, I've said it before, Cleveland is not scared at all of the Raptors, and the Raptors know they can't win either. You got a questionable Kyle Lowry if he's going to play or not. It's going to be the Cavs 100, Raptors 95.
Okay, so you're saying close as well.
Yep.
A little bit lower scoring. All right. Vogues, have you ever gone to Canada for a Labatt Blue?
I've gone to Canada, but not to Toronto, unfortunately. It's on my list of places to get to. It seems like a pretty engaging city, but I don't think it'll be so after tonight. This is probably Toronto's best chance to kind of steal one and make this a series, but LeBron's playing too well, and as a result, the Cavs are playing too well. I think Cleveland gets it done. They can score as many points as they need to. I don't think they quite have to go totally maxed out. It'd be about 108-105.
Okay. Do you know Pam Anderson was discovered at a CFL football game in Canada, Vogues?
So was Mike Riley, I've been told.
Okay. Who would you rather see on a Jumbotron, Pam Anderson or Mike Riley?
Probably Pam.
And you can go any age, Pam now or Pam then. And I love Mike. So more NBA. Moving on. Spurs and Rockets. Houston favored -4.5. Life without Tony Parker begins for the Spurs tonight on the road. They played well with a small lineup. I don't know how long it'll last, how well it can carry them to get a spurt going. Houston will adjust, and Harden will absolutely adjust. Now, Cedric Golden told us that Kawhi will probably play point tonight in the rest of the series. I'm anxious to see that. The guy's already been the leading scorer, and he's D'd up Harden or whoever your top scorer is. That's just what he does. But what can Patty do tonight? I think the Rockets bounce back. It's going to be a yin and a yang series where it's going to just go back and forth until someone steals that seventh game. Give me the Rockets tonight. I don't think it'll be as bad as game one, but they'll win handily. 118-103. Give me a 15-point win. I know it's a smaller line, -4.5, but too much to overcome without Parker and too much question with Aldridge. And I just don't think Patty Well, he might be better the next game with this role. I think it'll be a big ask for him to be a difference maker out of the chute this game.
So I think Patty Mills is actually the better player right now, although Tony Parker's prime is better than Patty Mills' prime. But it's just been fascinating to watch the Spurs these last two, three games, even against Memphis, where the beautiful ball movement, the team ball movement they're used to, and it's looking like a one-man show with Kawhi Leonard. So that's been kind of interesting. I think Houston's just the more talented team right now. I like Houston tonight, 115, the Spurs, 101.
Okay, so we're in the same ballpark there. TJ, you plagiarist. I love you. Vogues, what do you think happens tonight?
Yeah, I think you'll see San Antonio sort of get a little bit of a boost from the, okay, we're down a man. We've got to come out and put a little bit more forth. That'll carry him for a while. But I think being on Houston's home floor, you know, game three, it's kind of a pivotal swing game in any seven-game series. So I think ultimately the Rockets end up pulling away for a slight cover, 114-107.
All right, Kentucky Derby. Vogues, you've been to the Derby in about 30 seconds. What do you think of it? How was the experience?
It was good. If I were to go back, that was in my younger years when I was more of an infield guy. If I were to go back, I'd probably spring for an actual ticket and sit among the hoity-toity there and do it that way. So just kind of depends on where you're at in life, I guess.
All right. Your favorite is Always Dreaming, 4-1. The long shot, the mother of all long shots, fast and accurate, not named after my three-point shot, 66-1. And there's no Mr. Ed, but you have Thunder Snow, which is a cool name. It's up there with War Admiral for me. Looking at Lee, Untapped, Always Dreaming, State of Honor, Gervin, Hence, IRAP. Guinevere, Battle of Midway's a sweet name. Sonneteer, J-Boy's Echo, Empire Classic, McCracken. Taprit, Irish War Cry's a good name. Groomly, Practical Joke, and Patch. If you're just going all name team, you've got a good field. Vogues, set the bar here. What do you like?
Well, McCracken will probably get a lot of attention at the windows tomorrow, I think. Good horse.
13-2.
Tough to leave it off, but I'm going to, or at least off my win ticket. I like Taprit quite a bit. I think his odds will drop a little as well. So that leaves me with Thunder Snow, who was 20-1 last I looked. Probably come down to around 15-1, and that's right in the range I like to be in for a Kentucky Derby win bet.
Okay. Teach?
I'm not a horse fan, so might not even watch this.
They don't
this.
Like you either.
Yeah, I'll go with Irish War Cry because I would like to see a horse cry. So there you go.
Wow, well, you got kicked by the junk.
Yeah.
So now, when you were younger, I'm going to go Always Dreaming. Okay? I'm going to be just a sellout and go with the 4-1 favorite. And there we have it. Again, the Friday forecast brought to you by your friends at the Gamblers Assistance Program, the Nebraska Council on Compulsive Gambling and Choices Treatment Center. If you or someone you love has a problem, please call the statewide helpline, 1-800-522-4700. Vogues, we'll catch up with you again next hour. Talk a little more derby, talk a little more football, all right?
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Winding down hour one. Don't forget, next segment to start off hour two, Jim Walden, former Iowa State coach, Nebraska assistant. He'll have a thought or two on Big Brian from Iowa City. Want to tap the line, dial us up from Shillingbridge, Cork, and Tap House, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Nate is on hold. Nate has been patient. Nate, welcome to Cinco de Mayo. How are you?
Chris, how are you, man?
I'm good.
Dude, so did you catch the listener roundtable on Nick's show?
They had a bar chained to the wall, and that's where you were chained to, envisioned it.
It was touch and go for a while. I found out that John is actually insane, but it was a lot of fun. You guys got a nice little set of digs there, man. It's pretty awesome. I tried to wait around for you, but Nick wasn't sure when you were coming in. So, look, I
sleep upstairs.
That's terrifying, man. So I love Billy D. I grew up watching Billy D on NETV doing the Husker program of the week with Dick Janda doing all the visuals and stuff. I mean, I love the guy. He's out of his mind. Okay, first of all, Colorado, there are two rivals Nebraska has had in my 35 years of life. Oklahoma, our respect rival, and Colorado, our hate rival. At 11 years old in 1992, I skipped the frozen Halloween and went half-naked to Memorial Stadium to chuck oranges at Colorado football players. You cannot tell me that is not a rivalry. When you go back to the Sal and Nessies and Eric Bieniemies, and you know, I felt bad. I finally watched that Gospel of Mac documentary.
It's a great documentary.
Oh, dude, I cried. I'm not going to lie. I felt horrible for hating this guy for the first 20 years of my life. He's a saint. You're going to get canonized. But that said, Colorado is absolutely a rivalry, not Kansas State. We were their rival. They were never ours. We never care about Iowa State had a more meaningful win against us in 92 than Kansas State ever did. Ever did. You know, and Iowa, you have to care about Iowa. Iowa is a fixation for Nebraska fans because they represent the mediocrity we are trying to avoid. So as long as we feel like we can beat Iowa or we're somehow highbrowing Iowa, then we're staving off the mediocrity that we've been carefully floating through in the doldrums of Peterson and now the Red Devils.
Let me jump in here, Nate. I think Colorado finally became a rival when they won a national championship before Osborne did. That's when the wake-up call, without Colorado getting great, Nebraska doesn't revamp and you don't have 93 through 97.
How good would it have been if we had Hagen versus Frazier head-to-head?
Well,
the point is
Colorado beat Nebraska for Sal and Nessie. Colorado beat Nebraska for Darian Hagen.
Yeah, they did.
And that's...
I don't know that.
on the recruiting trail, that's what tipped it over. It went from having Steve Taylor and Gadowski, with all due respect to Keith and McCant or Mickey Joseph, Colorado won because they had better quarterbacks and they beat Nebraska. So it became a rivalry on the recruiting trail, and then it became a rivalry on the field when they won a title before Nebraska.
Are we
Kansas
supposed
State
to be that butthurt over Drew Ott? I would have took him, but I mean, it's not Darian Hagen. It's not Eric Bieniemy. I mean,
how well has Nebraska's defensive ends played the last 3 years?
Touche. Well, I mean, are you counting Smokey the Bear?
Yeah, I thought he was all right, but he's not Drew Ott. Drew Ott was all Big Ten.
I think Gregory is a better raw natural talent, man.
Gregory's fine, but you have somebody Oppo Gregory once. Homeboy went to Youngstown, that's my point.
I think Wisconsin and Northwestern have been more rivals. Northwestern and us have played five really good games.
You're right with not wanting to become Iowa, but now you got to beat Iowa. So.
Well, touche. I'm with you on that. Man, it's always a pleasure, bro. Tell J-Bone I said hi.
Take care. There he is. Nate.
All right.
Top rope. Steel chair. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. Jim Walden, Gentleman Jim, next.
Hale Varsity Magazine presents the Hale Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hale Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get beat, beat.
We get beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Back at it into Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Gentleman Jim Walden joins us, longtime head coach in Iowa State, and of course, Washington State quarterback for Coach Devaney at Wyoming, longtime assistant in Nebraska. Coach, it's been a little while. How you been?
Well, I've just been great. I had a good winter. Hung out down in Tucson and played a little golf, and I didn't have any ills of any kind, so I feel very fortunate, Chris, to be as healthy as I am, and hope more people are. And so, thanks for asking, but I've had a good year.
Well, I tell you what, 24 hours to simmer down for some Nebraska fans based on Brian Ferentz's comments. And we talked a ton about this yesterday, so I don't want to keep beating a dead horse, but I wanted your take on this because you coached in Ames for so many years, and you know more than I do about the Iowa State rivalry, and of course you have an association and a love for Nebraska because of your time here. What's your reaction to the comments?
I'm going to pass a little bit, but I'm going to tell you what I wouldn't have done. I don't know if I would have come out and said something in regard to Nebraska's recruitment of and getting into the NFL. I thought he might have crossed the boundary there. But I have heard rumors, Chris, that a lot of the guys in the Mid-American Conference, and I think you've got two coaches now in Minnesota and at Iowa State, who seem to go out and figure we're going to offer 150 guys. We'd probably be lucky to get 30, but if we get few that we don't want, if somebody comes better, we won't honor that commitment. Now, that sounds distasteful, but then again, if a football player who signs with the University of Nebraska, and not signs, if he commits, and then about 30 days, 35, 40 days later, he decides to change his mind and go to USC, nobody seems to think that's a bad deal. But yet, if a college goes out and says, we're going to give some fake commitments, is what I think he's saying, we're going to offer more guys than we intend to take. And if the wrong guys commit at some point in time, we'll say, hey, we're sorry, we don't have a... I never did that, Chris. I couldn't bring myself to do that. We just didn't offer. And maybe it speaks to the... Maybe I was behind the times, I don't know. But and I know that all the coaches, when I was coaching, that was not a situation that we ever faced. When Tom Osborne offered you a scholarship when he was at Nebraska, and I'm sure of this when I was there with Bob, we offered you a scholarship, you had it. If you didn't want it, that's your business. But if we offered you a scholarship, you were going to get the scholarship. I mean, that's just the way it was. And I understand sometimes that's not the way it is now. I think there is a little bit to what Brian Ferentz said, that there's a little bit of over-offering going on. And I think he was making a point. I'm not sure his dad's going to let him say anything. Knowing Kirk Ferentz like I do, Chris, that'll be the last time you'll hear him speaking in public for a while.
That's what I'm wondering, Coach. How was the dinner table after that interview?
Well, I don't think he probably went to his mom and dad's to eat.
No, but he might for Sunday dinner this weekend.
He may miss it. Knowing Kirk Ferentz, who is the most closed mouth, close to the vest, you know, in all the years he's been there, I don't think he's ever said anything more controversial than, oh, I miss Mother's Day or something, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did not quite get the same feeling that when he was talking about Nebraska, I don't know how you guys feel. I thought he was talking a different direction, talking about hope. I didn't quite get his feeling about coaches out talking hope. Every coach should be talking hope. Hope to come in and play. Hope to do well. Hope to win a championship. Hope to get pro, go to the pros if that's what you want. Hope to get a degree. I think if you took the word hope, would have been a little offensive to me had I been the people at Nebraska. I probably can see where they'd be a little uptight about that.
Well, and you know how you fix it is you don't get beat 40-10 on Black Friday. I mean, that's kind of my resolution to this whole thing is quit getting dominated in the trenches by Iowa. I mean, Iowa's kicking Nebraska's butt, and Nebraska's going to try and do something about it. I think the point he was making, and it was at the end of the interview, and it was that his pops and his dad's vision of Iowa football has been alive and well nearly 20 years, and that's amazing in today's day and age of college football. Him and Bob Stoops, the longest tenured guys that I can think of right now. And that was the point, which I get, but he was, I think, poo-pooing the longevity at Nebraska of Riley and his staff. And yeah, they're going on year three, and you're going to sell, hey, come to Nebraska. I mean, Riley's as excited. Riley and his staff are as excited as they've ever been, and they love the product they're selling. And yeah, they're selling hope, but they're also nailing it on the recruiting trail. They got to translate it to the field, but it's going well. But Iowa, and you know this, Coach, Iowa's always kind of figured, this is my view on them, they'll zero in, they'll evaluate, they'll develop. And they're going to get who they can get. And most of the time, they're under the radar guys that they've done well at developing. Am I wrong with that?
No, Iowa has never changed their plan. You're 100% correct. They don't take a lot of guys from Iowa. I think Kirk figured that out along with Hayden Fry years ago. There's only so many good kids in the state of Iowa in a given year. I used to say, if you're talking pure blue chip, I mean, the guys that you really believe is going to come in and start for you for 3 years, because that's my theory. Used to be not all American, not all, just can these kids come in and help us as a starting football player for 3 years? That's what we classified a three-year a blue chip athlete. And you're not going to find more than a half a dozen of those on any given year at Iowa. And they figured it out a long time ago that we'll make some mistakes on not taking a kid in Iowa, but we're not going to make many mistakes on kids giving too many, Chris. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the one thing I learned about Iowa. You give a lot of Iowa scholarships, you're going to end up not doing really well. Now, that hurts Iowa State, because when I was there, and it won't do any different today, Iowa is the kingpin and has been for a long time because of the 20 years of Kirk Ferentz, because of Hayden Fry's tenure there. They've dominated the state. The population of the state is over on the Iowa City side. And if there's five guys, there's a good chance they're going to get four of the best five in the state every year. That forces Iowa State to do what the coach is doing there now, and that's probably get out, probably offer a lot of scholarships more than they do. That's the one thing Kirk Ferentz can't understand. He played at Iowa. He's now only been to Iowa. He has never walked in the shoes of a Cyclone football coach going against a school that dominates most of the best players in their own state. And I applaud the guy at Iowa State. If that's what it takes to get him, get his team back to where he wants it to be and what he wants done, he has to do it. But Kirk, Little Ferentz has not walked in his shoes. So I was a little bit taken back by the fact that if you haven't walked in my shoes, man, don't second guess what I'm doing. I guess that's what I'm saying to Little Ferentz. You don't know how it is at Iowa State. You haven't been there. And you've only been at the school in a state that dominates almost 99 percentile of the kids they recruit.
Well, and that's kind of my reaction, too. I will give Brian Ferentz his due, because Iowa's lines have been good. I think he learned a lot from his daddy from a coaching standpoint, but Brian was good enough to start for his daddy, which is a whole new world of pressure on that offensive line at center. So I think the guy can coach, but he's 34, and just around the coaching fraternity, guys I've reached out to, they think he's talented and good, but they're not sure if how much of it he's gotten on his own. There's not been a lot of worldview from Brian, as far as I can look at, with his coaching career at the age of 34.
Well, and that's my point, Chris, exactly. I mean, he doesn't know what it's like to call a kid from Davenport, Iowa, and have him say, I'm sorry, coach, but my son's practicing basketball. You can call him back later. What Brian Ferentz hears when he calls is, oh, my gosh, coach, I'll get right back to him. We'll have him on the phone, and I'll have him give you a call. There's a difference between how a kid receives a call from the Hawkeyes in Davenport than the one he's going to get from the Iowa State Cyclones in Davenport. And he doesn't understand that. If I were him, and I'm sure his dad is going to make him really this morning or whatever he did, I think it was a couple of days ago,
yep.
Brian Ferentz probably got a real good lecture in a private meeting with his father, who is his head coach, about walking in people's shoes. That maybe, son, you need to keep your damn mouth shut. That's probably what I'm going to get if I were a betting man, because all he's done is irritate a couple, three schools. His tree of coaching and recruiting is not bona fide for him to be making. That's just, I just felt that way. I think you haven't walked in the Minnesota shoes, man. You haven't walked in Cyclone shoes, and you certainly don't need to take on Nebraska over there, because they've been known to have some pretty damn good football players, and Mike Riley's a pretty good coach. And so don't poke a guy in the chest if you don't have to. I shouldn't say that, because I'm the world's worst at giving that advice.
Who'd you poke?
Well, I just said what I thought. I told him one time what I said at Washington State, they put USC on probation for 2 years, 3 years. They couldn't go to the Rose Bowl after the first year. The second year, they passed some crazy rule that they could get out, like they could let them out of jail this year, and then they'd have to go back in next year. And so I put it in the paper. I didn't know when they put you in jail that you had a get-out release plan so that you could play it. I thought when you was on probation for 2 years, you couldn't go to bowls. And they literally let them off of a probation deal so they could go to the Rose Bowl because they won the championship. And I spotted off about that, and it didn't go over too well with the USC. I called them a bunch of crooks. And they're in jail, and they let them out to play in the – best at that time, the granddaddy of them all, it was upsetting to me. It was upsetting to a lot of coaches, but I have to be the one that said something about it. And I got myself scolded a little bit.
Well, but doesn't mean you weren't right.
Well, I was totally right, but you know how they do. They say, well, you should do these things in proper channels. I said, you know, proper channels never gets to the newspaper.
Yeah.
So no one ever knows that you're right or wrong or that you're upset about it. So I went to the only source that a guy from Washington State could get, because you knew if I went to the press, it wasn't going to get anywhere, because at that time, USC owned the media, owned the Pac-12 conference, and owned everything else about it.
Mm.
So if you got to fight, you better fight with what tools you got, and that's what I did. But and so that's why I say I shouldn't be spouting off. But I think with Brian, only 34 years old, Chris, and not having a family, a coaching tree of any depth more than he does, he probably would look at it today and say, I might have been a little out of line.
Coach, I wanted to get your thoughts here as we wind down, just your time at Iowa State and your approach, and you've kind of outlined it here as we've talked, but what was it like with your time at Iowa State? Because Nebraska did well with kids in Iowa, and I'm thinking Trev Alberts and Roger Craig and Jimmy Williams, and I think you were at Washington State when that was going on. But you get my point. Nebraska would go get who they wanted at Iowa State. You had Iowa, and then you have the rest of the Big Ten. Take me through the process of finding and keeping a kid that you wanted at Iowa State when you were there.
Well, it was really hard, to say the least. We had no area, Chris. I mean, when you stop and look back, now think about this. When I was in the Big Eight, I had Kansas and Kansas State and Missouri to my southern border. Well, why would a kid leave any one of those three schools to come up to Iowa State?
Mm-hmm.
I had Nebraska on my western border. I had Iowa on my eastern border and Minnesota on my northern border. So I got two Big Ten schools, two border towns. I've got four Big Eight schools, and there was no players in the state of Iowa to speak of in a sense of numbers that you need when you're going to give out 25 scholarships. And so you were trapped to have to go out. I used to say, I have to go to somebody else's garden to try to get their best fruit.
Mm.
And they weren't going to let you do that. Now, keep in mind, the thing that's helped a little bit is that Iowa State now is in the Big 12. They can go into Texas. I couldn't do that. We didn't have Texas because we didn't play Texas.
Mm.
And so I didn't have an area. Like when I was at Washington State, I had California.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had the state of Washington, because the state of Washington notoriously runs about anywhere from 10 to 13 or 14 really top-notch kids every year. And Don James couldn't take them all. So I got a pretty darn good football player out of the state of Washington every year, Chris. And I didn't feel like I was able to do that in Iowa, because Iowa, pretty well, as I said before, if there were five really good kids in the state of Iowa, blue chip as we call them, pretty much they'd get four of the five. It was a rarity for me to get that top-notch guy. And even that wasn't always the case, because sometimes they'd go to Michigan State, or they'd go to Michigan, or they'd go to Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
So even Hayden didn't get them all. And so that's what it's up. That's what the problem is, and I think it's still a little bit that way. You just have to be real careful of the Iowans that you take, and then you got to go someplace else all the time. Now, and Nebraska did a great job of that, when you stop and think. But here's what saved Nebraska through Bob Devaney and through Tom and through all the rest. The great Nebraska football player, whether he's an eight-man football player and he's a star on his team, but he's not a what you call a world-class athlete, he wants to go to Nebraska, so he'll give it a shot 1 year to see if he measures up. So with that thought, we used to recruit a half a dozen. Cleet Fisher would try to talk us into taking everybody out of Nebraska. But we'd recruit about seven or eight guys in Nebraska. Then we'd get 35 to walk on, and out of that 35, half a dozen to 10 of them would turn out to be really good players. So we used to say we never have a bad recruiting year at the University of Nebraska because of our walk-on situation. So, and then our name, due to Coach Devaney's efforts, and Tom's continuation, the Nebraska name became bigger in California. You could get the skilled kid. You could go back east and get some guys. And so that's how the whole thing worked. I never could able to get that done at Iowa State.
Jim Walden with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Coach, we'll chat again. I always love catching up, and keep that golf game going.
I'll do it, my man. Take care. Have a great summer.
Gentlemen, Jim Walden, legendary coach, many programs, great assistant. There's your rundown. He knows it. He's lived in Iowa a ton.
Former black shirt, Jim Moore.
That thing
Brandon
is big,
Vogel
Jay.
Joins us
that
next
thing
on Hale Varsity Radio.
Jay. Oh, man, who backed up Jay? Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
I always love talking with Jim Walden. He is a treat. He's worried about how family dinner is going to go next time at the Ferentz house. And do not talk about what it's like to be in my shoes if you're at Iowa State. Son. Jim Walden was great. Welcome in, Mr. Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel. We love talking with Vogues. Vogues, how's your week? How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing okay. I'm taking your derby pick earlier to the window. You know that.
Oh, okay. Well, good luck to you. I typically like to wait and see how the odds are moving because, well, the Derby's impossible to figure out. Like, it's just, it's too many horses, too hard. They're all too good. So I used to, back in my horse playing days, spend a lot of time watching all the, you know, the Derby prep races and going over the forms and looking for something to make some sense of it. But eventually I just got to a point where I'm like, well, I'm going to watch the odds. We know what the morning line odds were. So from there, you can kind of make an informed guess about value, at least. That keeps me sane. So,
Vogues, you went to the Kentucky Derby. Tell me about your experience. Did you wear a hat?
Well, I think I wore a baseball hat. I did not wear a fancy Derby hat because this was only a year or two after I was out of college. Went with my college roommate who was living in Nashville at the time. So we all gathered in Nashville and hit things pretty hard there the night before. So we didn't end up going up until the day of, but drove a couple hours to Louisville and took in the Derby from the infield, which is certainly as crazy as everyone says it is. Totally a party atmosphere. You don't really get to watch the races, but nobody in the infield seems to care. If you care about horse racing and you want to see the Super Bowl of the sport, get a seat in the actual bleachers.
Vogues, within the realms of good taste, what's the craziest thing you saw in the infield?
yeah, that's a tough question than you might think. Probably the Everclear soaked watermelon that got passed around. if you've never had a chance to try that, I recommend it once and once only. So yeah, that's kind of what I remember the most, perhaps, from that day.
Do you see a lot of celebrities that day, like maybe Tom Brady or Wes Welker?
No, this was again. I was in with the riffraff in the infield.
Okay.
If you've ever read, if anyone listening hasn't read Hunter Thompson's famous "The Kentucky Derby is Decadent and Depraved," that's it's a little bit of an exaggeration, but not much when he talks about sort of the class divide between those of us on the infield and the people that you see actually wearing big fancy $300 hats. So, unfortunately, no celebrities for me. I think Jordan was there because he's there most years. And this was a while back, but I did not get to see him, unfortunately.
Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Vogues, we'll get to some Nebraska football thoughts as far as the guys working out for teams this weekend in a minute, but I wanted to spend a couple of minutes on your book with John Cook. And if folks are unaware, I want folks to become aware of the project you've been working on, and folks can pre-order that, and I want a few minutes on this right now. Give folks a look behind the curtain. You got some great work coming up.
Yeah, so it's pretty exciting news. It's been trickling out a little bit, but the book itself is called Dream Like a Champion by John Cook, which I got the opportunity to co-write that with him. It was kind of a sprint there a little bit. We basically started in August, when he was working on his defending a national title, so he was plenty busy. Football season's busy for us at Hale Varsity, but we carved out some time, had some really great, lengthy conversations about how he's approached coaching, why he approaches things that way, has some really, really interesting ideas on motivation, recruiting, you know, all the things you think a coach has to think about And in writing the book, I found that those really have applications to almost any sort of leadership position. So it's a book that's really going to appeal to volleyball fans first and foremost, but Coach Cook views himself still sort of as a football coach. I think if you, you know, put the choice on the table for him right now and said, okay, you do one more thing for the rest of your life. Is you gonna stick with volleyball where you had all the success, or you want to go back and try and coach football? He might say football. So that's the kind of guy he is. We clicked really well, and the book will be out in the fall. You can order it now at the University of Nebraska Press's website, and it's also on Amazon.
Dream Like a Champion, John Cook, Brandon L. Vogel. And if you're just a Nebraska fan, you need to get this thing. And he is extremely intense, but I just love his philosophy on coaching, and I love his philosophy on teaching, and just his recruiting style is great when it comes to not only profiling, but just kind of the background, isn't it?
It really is. You know, loves the Nebraska girls. And he loves the players they become for a specific reason. You know, he has seen through countless examples a lot of the things that I think we talk about and see with the football programs, that a lot of times these players are from small towns. They have a lot of support behind them. A lot of times they've played multiple sports, and they know what it takes to work hard. I know people can think that's sort of a cliche when you hear it so often about Nebraska, but here's someone competing at the highest level of their sport and saying, no, definitely, I see it. He's from California. You know, there was a time where Nebraska was just the place where his job was, and it's become much more for him than that. Of course, like football, you can't get all of your players from the state of Nebraska. The state's just too small population-wise. So how do you go out and find those qualities that you like with the players at home when you have to go out and recruit in Illinois and Texas and California? And we talk about that in the book, too. It's a pretty interesting answer.
Situation you think will be best this weekend for a lot of the tryout guys for Nebraska? And I'm thinking of Tommy. I'm thinking of some other guys, Michael Rose-Ivy, chance with the Niners, and Westerkamp. What are you interested in here come Sunday night with all these Huskers? Of course, you have Kevin Maurice, too, down in Jacksonville.
Yeah, you know, Maurice is one that I think that probably has more of a shot than we necessarily talk about. It would have been interesting to see what he would have been at Nebraska with maybe another year of development. That, not that he didn't develop, but just they played him that freshman year and he didn't get a ton of snaps. So imagine if he's coming back on Nebraska's defensive line now. You don't get that, but he's going to get a chance to go out and chase that dream. And I think he's got a shot. I still think Brandon Riley and Stephen Carter are probably two of your best bets among that group to stick a little bit. And I'll be real interested to see how things progress with Jordan Westerkamp. Guy plenty of Nebraska fans are really, really familiar with. Sort of went to situation, got a little strange there with the tryout and everything like that, but you certainly hope it works out for him.
Absolutely. How about Tommy? He's, and I read this today in the Minneapolis newspaper online edition, and I didn't know Tommy was recruited as a safety by Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, because he's going to get a look at safety. He's going to get a look at running back, at wide receiver, and just kind of go make plays is his attitude. He's got a lot of support up there with Newby and Searles and Cotton. I mean, he's got half his offense or former offense up there. I think he could have a really good weekend to be part of the 93-man roster, 90-man roster, whatever it is. I think it's a 90-man roster. But he could make, for lack of a better term, the team, to keep trying to make the team this weekend, don't you think?
I do think so. Probably gets underrated a little bit just because we don't talk about them as much, the numbers as much with quarterbacks, but really, really probably one of the most athletic guys on the team. You know, when you think back to what he was able to do in pro day and just his speed and athleticism, that's pretty enticing. I mean, enticing enough for a guy who played quarterback for 4 years to get a shot. So that kind of tells you what you need to know. I think you're right. I think he does have a legitimate chance to, I guess, at least go beyond the weekend for whatever stage is next.
Vogues, you're a fashion guy. We talk shoes a lot. What do you think of the Big Baller brand first edition for Lonzo? Not the price point, but give me a reaction to their look. I'm sure you've consulted with the Ohio State wide receivers coach on this too.
They're fine. Like, I didn't look at that and say, "Oh, those are terrible," or "Oh, those are great." Kind of remind me of some past Kobe Bryant shoes, which is fine. I tend to like Kobe Bryant's shoes. But yeah, you know, I think if you're going to, the price point is actually the most interesting part about it, because yes, it's ridiculous right off the top, but the point of it seems to be that it's ridiculous and we're going to brand ourselves a certain way by putting out a $500 shoe that's no different from the $150 shoes, and let's see what happens. I'm quite interested to see what happens with that. It hasn't been going very well on Twitter so far, though.
No, he's been getting smoked on Twitter. That said, have you seen Darren Revelle put out a number of sales numbers yet? Have you?
No, I have not.
Neither have I.
It'll be, I can't imagine they're going to be too high.
What if Ocho Cinco and a bunch of former dudes just gobble it up? Because it sounds like that's where the support's coming from.
Yeah, I mean, Kanye West shoes are $350, I think. I don't know. I don't have any. But
not yet.
I think that's the price point on those. And so I guess, what's the real difference? Well, Kanye's sort of cemented himself, I guess, as a cultural influencer, whereas Lonzo Ball, outside the mind of LeVar, has not. He's a really good basketball player, but that's it at this point. Mm-hmm. He's probably best known for his dad, unfortunately for him.
Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Read Vogue's Hot Reads. Great stuff coming in the yearbook from Brandon Vogel. And, of course, his book with Coach John Cook on Amazon. Can log on and get an advanced copy of that at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, we will bother you tomorrow morning. Thanks for a few minutes.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
There he is. Can't wait to read his book. I know he worked his butt off on it. It's going to be great. We will talk Salt Dogs on the way.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It's time to talk a little Salt Dog baseball, and play-by-play man of the Dogs, Michael Shively, is with us, the pride of Lincoln East. Michael, nice to meet you. How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing great. Good to meet you too, Chris. And pride of Lincoln East, I don't know if I've quite reached that yet.
There's a lot of candidates.
There are.
But every time I run across or we talk to somebody from East, they're the pride of Lincoln East. All right.
I can put that on the bio about me then.
Last time we talked to Chris Walker, pride of Lincoln East. Last time we talked to Rob Zadiska, pride of Lincoln East. Coach Gingery, pride of Lincoln East.
Absolutely.
And for today, Michael Shively, pride of Lincoln East, man. So you're back in your hometown, and you're the new voice of Salt Dog Baseball. Salt Dog Baseball so near and dear to so many Lincolnites' hearts, and you got to be smiling, man. The season's just around the corner.
Oh, I'm so excited for the season to get going here. Just a couple weeks, and we have some exhibition games coming up here shortly, too. So the feel of baseball, feel of professional baseball in Lincoln, at least, is back, and that's good. And you know, I'm getting back in my hometown after some time away, so I can't be more excited than start some Salt Dogs baseball now.
So you spent a year at Gary. You're back
Correct.
Now in Lincoln. Give me the full bio here, the yearbook stuff.
Okay.
Because we're on here in Lincoln and across the state. And, hey, man, congrats to you and where you're at and where to start, where the interest start. And East, I know, does student broadcasting, and it looks like it's a great program, and you're proof of that.
Yeah, where did it start? When I realized I couldn't be an athlete, and I'm sure so many of the sports broadcasters have that same start where they're, well, I'm not going to make it as an athlete. So then your interest starts in how can I still be involved in sports, and talking about it is one way. So then I did the whole student newspaper thing at Lincoln East, and then at UNL, the experience there is incredible.
Yep.
I mean, with KRNU and the BTN Student U, I got to call a game on actual BTN too, across everywhere in college. So that was great. And then I went to the Railcats and did everything. I mean, I called the home games and I did all the media relations, but I also, you know, wrapped the sleeves around the hot dogs. I sold tickets. I picked up players from the airport and did everything left and right, picked up trash at the ballpark, ran promotions. And so that fully ingrained in minor league baseball there. And luckily now that I have director of broadcasting next to my name, you know, I can drop some of the hot dog responsibilities and focus more on the media, which is great. But after the Railcats, I went to News Channel Nebraska in Norfolk, and so I did more sports there and news and covered the whole state based out in the Northeast.
No, I tell you what, and that's a great organization up there in Norfolk. That's mm-hmm. where my side of the family, my dad's side, originally was from.
Great.
And so you had the Chris Whitney experience?
Yeah, yeah.
C-Dub's awesome. Love the guy.
Yeah, yeah. He moved to Omaha just before I got up to Norfolk, but he came up all the time to help with things, and Chris Whitney's great. And he's good to work with. And his tagline at the end, he drags out Whitney for about 3 seconds. He goes, "With the news, I'm Chris Whitney."
There you go. Need a signature there. And we're talking Salt Dogs baseball, new play-by-play, Michael Shively. Of course, you can hear the Salt Dogs all season long, all summer long, ESPN 1480, the ESPN 1480 app. So let's talk about this year's squad. Manager Brown, any thought or feeling identity-wise, what you think folks will be able to see and, mm-hmm. and kind of how they'll attack things offensively and defensively?
So what we saw when Bobby came last year was his first season. The team jumped 18 games in wins mm-hmm. just that 1 year. And there's so many other things that can be attributed to that, but Bobby, a big part of it. Last year, this team had the lowest number of stolen bases in franchise history. That will not be the case this year. They reloaded the squad, took some guys down from about 280 pounds to more in the 180 range. Mm-hmm. So expect to see more life on the base paths. I wouldn't say it'll be stealing left and right, but it's not going to be a franchise low in stolen bases. There are some power guys on there. Kurt Smith is back. He's in the top five in basically every offensive category for career numbers in franchise history. So he's back. He'll be in the 3 or 4 hole most likely. But there should be some firepower. A lot of the guys have played together before, specifically on the Dutch national team.
Wow.
In the World Baseball Classic, 5 Salt Dogs played in that just a few months ago for the Kingdom of the Netherlands.
So let's talk a little bit about projected protection for Smith. He's the offense guy. You're going to have more athleticism on the base path, so presumably you don't have to have extra base hits or the big yeah. shot. Over left, right field, or center field. So who's the protection there? I mean, how can it kind of distribute a bit so it's not all the heavy lifting for Smith?
Well, Christian Ibarra is probably the guy that I'll say right off the bat. If you're a hardcore Salt Dogs fan, you remember him from last year because he played in about 18 games before he just dominated the league and got picked up by the Twins. Didn't work out bouncing around between single A, high A ball for him with the Twins. So now he's back here trying to get that call back up again. So Ibarra, I expect his numbers to be great. He was hitting upper 300s, like 380 territory in his short time with the Dogs last year. So he'll probably be more of a leadoff spot. Otherwise, I'd say you might keep your eye out on Trevor Adams.
Okay.
He's a Creighton grad, Lincoln Southeast guy, one of 3 Lincoln Southeast players on the roster. So a little Lincoln flavor for the hometown team there too. So Trevor Adams, he's reached AAA. He was at St. Paul last year. He was a great club in the association, so he could be a pretty important bat too.
Let's talk arms and some of the names folks need to listen for from you, and also go watch when you head out to Haymarket. How's the staff going to be?
Staff should be pretty well rounded. It's kind of tough to see where people will fit in right now, and the roster turnover is so great, especially in spring training. So it's tough to say who will be the number one starter, who's going to fit to the closer role. Derek Gordon, who's Alex Gordon's brother, mm-hmm. Is someone that I've heard management say could maybe do that closer role, at least in a bullpen spot. And he's a hard-throwing right-hander. He's 6'6", a few inches on Alex. So he could be a guy throwing some heat to guys late in games. Jake Kubler, another Lincoln Southeast guy, he has a lot of experience in the American Association as a starting pitcher, so he'll be in the rotation for sure. One guy that we just signed that I'm pretty excited about, just because you'd never hear this, is it's Seth Webster. He is a sidearm starting pitcher. You don't really hear that. Do you change the arm angles?
Not since scuba's off, you know?
Yeah, so he has his different arm angles that he's going to try to bring. At least I assume he'll continue trying to be a starting pitcher. Mm-hmm. He put up great numbers in high A ball for I forget what team he was with, but I think they might have just got scared away because he wanted to be a starter.
Sure.
And had the sidearm, but he had a, you know, 2-something ERA in high A ball, so I expect him to come in and at least be a change of pace.
The thing about Bobby Brown, too, is, I mean, the guy gets dudes that get picked up.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets talent, and he wins, and it'll be extremely exciting. And that plus 18 number you threw out earlier, folks will love it. And mm-hmm. Salt Dog Baseball, I mean, you're working on 20 years of Salt Dog Baseball in the community. That's incredible. Great folks down there. Of course, Charlie Meyer, Mr. Abel, of course, and Brett Beer. And I tell you what, the one of my favorites, Mr. Zuha. I mean, just great group. And you're talking and listening with new play-by-play man of the Salt Dogs, Michael Shively. And you'll catch all Salt Dog Baseball all summer long here on ESPN 1480. Hey, if folks want to kind of follow you and check you out, Twitter, social media, how can folks get in touch with you?
Yeah, at mshively94, that's S-H-I-V-E-L-Y for the spelling. You can find me on Twitter. Then, of course, all the Salt Dogs pages, I'll have my hands on those. So at Salt Dogs Ball on Twitter and Instagram, and Lincoln Salt Dogs on Facebook message. Add us on Twitter, whatever you want to do, and we'll be in touch with everybody. So follow along all season long.
SaltDogs.com. No time like now to get those season tickets or those homestand packages. Michael, great to meet you. We'll do this again, man.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, who backed up Jay? Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Saying goodbye on a Friday. If you are off to celebrate Cinco de Mayo, have a good one. Be smart about it. Drunk driving, a bad idea. If someone offers you a ride home and you say no, when you mix alcohol and driving, that's never good. Can take a life, can lose yours, can be arrested, can go to jail, can lose your license, pay legal fees, pay fines. Any way you look at it, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Department of Roads Highway Safety Office. So we're going to put a Twitter poll question up. Your go-to on Cinco de Mayo, Dos Equis, Corona, Modelo, or tequila?
None of the above for me.
You're just getting. Where are you going, though? You got to go celebrate a little bit, or are you stuck somewhere?
Yeah, I'm going to go celebrate a couple friends graduated law school this week. So going to go down to the old downtown area.
So they should have, like,
I'm sure there'll be Mexican beers, but I'll probably just have a Bud Light Lime or something.
Right. Come on.
It's nice out, nice weather.
That's fine. Find a Mexican beer you can enjoy tonight.
Eh. It's whatever. I hear people in Mexico don't even really celebrate Cinco de Mayo. No. I guess it's just become an American thing.
Yeah. I don't know. Are you a margarita guy?
No.
Or just tequila?
No.
You know what, TJ? You're a body shot guy, aren't you?
No. No. I'm just, I love champagne, man. I do love champagne. I don't know if you knew that about me or not, but I do love me some champagne.
I like the song, too, but, I mean, it's 311.
Yeah, don't know it.
How did you, out of all of the options, how did you pick that?
Just love the bubbly, man. Like, I hate that it's only like a New Year's Eve drink type thing. Like, I wish that was just more of a common drink.
If I were to break into TJ Henning's pad right now, there'd be a chilled bottle of champagne next to his bed.
Maybe. Or you could look up top and there's empty bottles of champagne.
Instead of NyQuil, TJ goes with champagne.
Yeah.
So, question. Have you done the Dom?
I mean, look, I'll do the cheap stuff. It doesn't matter
Dom
to me.
Dom is not cheap. Perignon.
But it all tastes good to me.
Okay. Your birthday is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pass the hat around. We're going to see a bottle of Dom Perignon.
There we go.
If you're a champagne guy.
Yeah.
You got to work on the lady yourself. I can give you the champagne. I can't legally do the lady for you.
That's all right.
You got a B-day coming up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, 27. Fast
God,
approaching.
I wish I was 27 again.
And I, yeah.
Be awesome.
What's the age you start wishing you having birthdays? I think it was like 24 for me.
What, your 20s go by in a blur. Once you hit about 32, you're like, this sucks because metabolism is gone. Mm.
Yeah, I'm hoping my metabolism of the gods stays around for quite a while.
You're still young. You hit 32, it's time to tap out and start exercising and eating just broccoli.
Ugh. I had Brussels sprouts last night.
Did you get the smoked Brussels sprouts?
I don't think so. But they weren't bad.
See, you got to get them blue blood style. They're awesome. Okay. Weekend edition tomorrow at 7 a.m. with Hail Varsity Radio and Magazine.com. Can go to iTunes or the ESPN 1480 app or HailVarsity.com for the podcast. Have a great weekend. Thank you.